At least I should have bothered him just once.
Humans form communities.
And from that diversity comes a strength.
Now get the hell out of our galaxy!
The year is 2024.
The name of the podcast,
Babylon 5.
For the first time.
Welcome to Babylon 5, for the first time, not a Star Trek podcast. My name is Jeff Aiken, and I am the one who was.
And I'm Brent Allen, and I am the one who will be.
We're watching Babylon 5 for the very first time for you, the one who is.
We are two veteran Star Trek podcasters who have decided to watch this show 30 years too late. But we're applying those skills that we have gained as Star Trek podcasters, that analytical lens. We're applying that right here to Babylon 5 to see what messages Babylon 5 is trying to deliver in its own unique way. Jeff, it occurs to me.
Yeah.
When we first started this podcast, we would say that a little bit different. We're looking for the Star Trek-like messages within Babylon 5. This is actually what we've been doing the entire time. We've always been looking for the messages that Babylon 5 is trying to tell in its own unique way. We just didn't have words for that.
Yeah.
Way back when. Like, this is honestly what we've never tried to look for the Star Trek message. So we said Star Trek-like message.
At the end, when we talk about it, we're saying the exact same things, right? A mirror to society, hope that we can do better, all those things. So yeah, we arrived. You know, we learned the vocabulary. It took us 4 seasons.
Yeah.
But here we are.
Because you know why?
Why is that?
This is not a Star Trek podcast.
At all.
It's a Babylon 5 podcast.
It is where we're looking for Babylon 5 messages. But because this is not a Star Trek podcast, Brent, we got to watch our mouths. We got to keep those references from slipping out because we are Star Trek podcasters. A lot of hours behind the mic talking about Star Trek. So we play a game called the Rule of Three. That game limits us to a maximum, not to exceed amount, of 3 references to Star Trek in total. For this entire episode.
That's it. 3. 1, 2, 3. No substitutions, exchanges, or refunds.
And if we happen to make one of those references, Jeff,
you're going to hear this.
Yeah, because while this is most definitely not a Star Trek podcast, it's probable that those references are going to slip in from time to time. Now, with that, we like that game. We like another game where we get to the end of the show and we predict what next week's episode is going to be about. We'll do it in this week's. We'll do it in this week's episode as well. We'll predict next week. Spoiler alert, pretty much going to say everything that didn't happen that I predicted for this episode is going to happen next week. Just push it off. That's just what I'm saying, Jeff. I don't know about you. Anyway, this is the part where we look back at what we guessed this week was going to be about and we play
Time to Pay the Piper.
That's right, Jeff. Why don't you remind us of what you said that this episode, Tragedy of Telepaths, was supposed to be about? And I'll tell you how close you were.
Lockley calls her old buddy Bester to come on the station and take out Byron and his crew.
You got a little South Carolina twang in there. Come on.
A little bit. Come on.
I like it. Dude, I mean, you like everything you said happened, but then so much more happened in the episode. So it's hard for me to like give you like the full point because like...
Well, I basically said Lockley's going to be there, and so will Bester.
Yeah.
That would be like any other episode saying, Lanier's coming on this one, and also Delenn will be there.
Right. But you still nailed Bester coming in, and that Lockley was going to call him in, and all of that. So, Jeff, I'm gonna hit you with 75% of it, just because you got it. You nailed that part. There was a lot more that happened in the episode.
A lot more that was a lot more entertaining than that. What did you think this one was going to be about?
Well, I basically said the same thing. I said Byron and the gang are going to be holed up in the down below area. They'll call in Bester to come handle the situation. But then I took it a step further and said, this is going to be the end of the telepath war because we're trying to get past this whole thing. And I think that the telepaths are all going to wind up dead. That was the tragedy of the telepaths, that they're all going to wind up dead in a Markab style type situation.
Wow.
No one left standing. And, that didn't happen, but next week's coming.
Yeah. And you hit kind of part of the stuff. Once again, see, this is that whole thing. I went super general. Yeah. I got a bunch. You went too specific. It's going to cost you. I'm going to give you half a point on this.
That's one. Fair. That's fair. Because that other half, I'm telling you, is coming next week. Just, I don't know if I can telegraph this any more of what I'm going to say later on in the episode.
You thought it was going to be about what? I never would have guessed that. Who knew? Well, listen, we've talked a lot about Byron coming into this investor, but there's a lot more that happened in this episode. And so if you are curious what that is, because maybe you haven't watched this in 20, 30 years, maybe you've never watched it before at all. Brent, why don't you walk us through A Tragedy of Telepaths?
Sure, this won't take very long. Picking right up from where we... I'm sorry. All right. Jeff, I don't know what the time... I don't know what our time is on like shortest recaps ever. This one's going to get close. I don't know if it's going to beat it, but it's going to get close.
We've got a couple last couple of weeks that have been... yeah.
All right, here we go. This one is thorough. It is complete, but everything that happens, happens. All right, here we go. Picking up from where we left off last week, the telepaths are indeed sealed up in their own little zone down there. Whenever Zach and the B5 maintenance crew try to get a plasma torch in, the telepaths play with their minds of the torture operator and they have to start all over again. Lockley goes in for a visit for absolutely no reason at all than trying to get a final negotiation, which doesn't go anywhere because it wouldn't. And that's okay, because guess what? Lockley has already called our old friend Bester in to help solve the problem. Bester arrives and helps the maintenance workers get their minds unmessed with. And just as the episode ends, he welcomes what we now know are called the Bloodhound Unit, ready to get to work in the next episode. Oh, wait, there is more, though. Remember in the last episode when Garibaldi mentioned that there was something about shipping lanes and raiders, but it didn't actually look like the raiders? Well, turns out that has continued. They've continued that line as well. And the member worlds of the Alliance are starting to look cross-eyed at one another because the Prakari, the Drazi, the Game, they've all found remnants of each other's ships mixed in with the debris from their own ships, which have been attacked. They're all itching to start shooting at each other, but Delenn positions white stars out there to keep an eye on all of them. You see, as members of the Alliance has jurisdiction for interplanetary disputes. This doesn't really sit well with the Drazi, especially, but it works, and they back off for now. And there's a C-plot of this episode, Jeff. It's Londo and Jakar back on Centauri Prime. Londo is going through some notes while Jakar is eating a nice fresh batch of spoo. Unfortunately, spoo isn't supposed to be eaten fresh. That's nasty. Only Narns can stomach that taste. And with that, Jakar wants to know, what other Narn are still on the planet? Londo and Jakar go check out the abandoned cells, and what do they find? Forgotten and left to rot is Natoth. I don't know if this is a brand new Natoth or if this is the good Natoth, because this certainly was not the bad Natoth that we saw last time. Anyway, Jakar wants Londo to get her out and get her out now. Londo can't legally. He says there's nothing he can do, but Jakar says nay, nay. And together they come up with a plan to spring Natoth from the Pokey, which includes parading her right in front of all the other Centauri and Londo being so drunk that he's kissing other people as he's walking by. But that is all an act because Londo is stone sober while this is all happening. Well, the ruse works. Natoth is on her way back to the Narn homeworld, and that leaves Londo and Jakar feeling pretty good. Working together, doing good stuff. Now it's time to go have some old rotten spoo. Jeff, what'd you think of this episode? Tragedy of Telepaths.
Bro, I was so bored through this whole episode. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just watching. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, Londo and Jakar, a little funny. Oh, fake spoo. Oh, is he poisoned? Is he this? No. It's the best. It's like the best possible news we could have gotten in so long. This is OG Natoth. This was Caitlin Brown.
Was it?
Yeah.
I was wondering if it was her or just a third actress playing Natoth.
Yeah, because why not, you know? I make a point on my first views, which you can watch me watch it for the first time on our Patreon. I avoid that bottom third, you know, the screen. But on my second one, I pay attention. And I think I had her credit, though, as Julie Caitlin Brown in this one. But it was OG Natoth.
Right.
But, like, they brought in Bester to this one. And Bester couldn't even save this whole telepath thing. Like, I just, oh, my God. Byron's getting mad that people are killing in his name. It's like, dude, are you the worst cult leader in history? What did you think was going to happen?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just they're making him more and more ridiculous all the time. I can't stomach it anymore. I have strong predictions for next week as well. But I love you called it the C plot because it's the Centauri Prime plot. And I loved it. It was fun. It was great. And it was also heavy. Spoiler alert, as we get into our conversation, I think that this episode had one of the most powerful scenes in all of Babylon 5. Stand by. We'll be right back. Are you ready to take your Babylon 5 for the first time experience to the next level? With our exclusive Patreon, you'll get access to all kinds of cool stuff that you can only find there. Our recording notes, unedited reaction videos, an exclusive Discord community, and you can even be listed as a producer of the show. Plus, we even offer exclusive meet and greets and hangouts. You won't find this kind of experience anywhere else. Get all these amazing benefits, plus the opportunity to interact with other fans from around the world. It's being part of a huge community where everyone shares the same appreciation for Babylon 5. Subscribe at patreon.com/Babylon5first. That's the number 5 and the word first to get access to these incredible benefits. That's patreon.com/Babylon5first. We can't wait to see you there.
Was it the one where they were walking drunkenly down the corridors?
That was one of the best. That was so awesome. That was great. But no. We'll talk about it because I think it was a huge moment.
Like, I mean, we're talking Londo and Jakar in an elevator type.
Yep. That
I
level.
Agree. I think I know exactly what you're talking about. And I 100% agree.
I watched that. Oh, but yeah, this one's not one I'm really super excited about, but what about you? Where were you on this one?
You know, in many ways I am the same way. I actually liked this episode as a whole, but Byron brought this episode down for me so much, and he wasn't even in that much of the episode. Everything without Byron I was cool with. The Londo and Jakar stuff, super compelling. I'll reiterate that from last week, and it stayed this way. It was the best part of the whole show. Even the Alliance stuff with the Drazi and the ships and all that kind of stuff, like that felt very season 2 Babylon 5, not season 1, season 2. It was in that realm for me. It feels like something that they could have solved by the end of the episode, but I think we're going to see more of this. And I've got a red string yarn theory I'm going to propose to you later on in our conversation. It's been a long time.
We're going to get the corkboard out.
It's been a long time since we've had a corkboard situation going on, but I got one for you today. Sweet. So we're going to talk about this. The Bester stuff, you know, when he's coming in and he's even that one did get me a little bit because he went down the same path that Byron's going down. He's like, well, those aren't my people. Those are your people. I'm going to take care of my people and take it. Like, he's in that exact same situation. I'm like, dude, stop it. Stop it. Anyway, I am a little miffed at this episode, though, because all the Byron stuff, dude, just yawn city, you know. I'm so mad that they didn't die.
Yeah.
I'm so mad we did not get the telepath war in this episode. In this episode. That means we have at least one more episode where this is going to play out. So that being said, I think overall, though, when I take the whole thing into account, I think I actually enjoyed this episode more than I have several of the other episodes of season 5 so far.
Wow.
You know what this one felt to me like? A Voice in the Wilderness Part 1.
Okay, I get that.
Like, it feels very setting up for whatever's coming next week. Like, everything feels like, all right, final pieces are put in place. We're getting everything where we need to go. You know, like, people could have said, hey, watch these two, whatever the next week is. I don't even know what the name of it is. In this one, like, do this as a mini binge. You know, do this as a two-parter in one. And this one has that, it's got that feeling. Remember when we got to the end of Voice in the Wilderness and we were like, why did we watch this episode by itself?
Yeah, we should have done both of them.
Well, but see, I disagree with that. I still think we did it the right way for our first watch.
Yeah, no, I.
Never again will we do them separate, but.
Whereas War Without End, those two episodes stand on their own, but also come together. And like, those are just masterpieces.
But that's why I chose Voice in the Wilderness and not War Without End. And I'm not just saying it's a part one of a two-parter, because that's not the case either. This is very specifically has a lot of that feel from Voice of Wilderness Part 1. And hey, man, hopefully next week's a wild ride, you know?
Could use one. You know what a wild ride was in this one, apparently, was the need and drive for ratings. I felt some strong late season Voyager in this one when Lockley gets out of bed just wearing her underwear.
You know, my note about that was I liked the fact that she looked normal waking up in the morning because she had bedhead. Her hair was kind of messed up. She did kind of have the skimpy underwear and all that sort of stuff. But remember all those times we saw Ivanova waking up in the morning and she had on the silky nightgown?
Yeah.
But she also looked like she was straight out of hair and makeup.
Uh-huh. Yeah, like perfect.
Yeah. That was not Lockley this morning. Like, she had to go through all that. And I appreciated that fact. And, you know, certainly she was in her undies. And then later in the episode, we saw her take off her pants and be back in her undies as she was crawling into bed again. Yeah, it had that, what was that? Like you almost just expected a blue light and some cream to get rubbed down on her. In
this episode. Someone to walk in and be like, I need some decontamination gel here. Ratings are important, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so she goes and she's going to solve. I enjoyed like her voiceover thing, you know, how it opened and closed with the voiceover. It was good. And especially just how pragmatic she is. She's just like, this is going to end with a bunch of dead people. Probably a lot of dead people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think it was so good that we got that voiceover from her because one, Tracy Scoggins knows, and we know we have one season with this lady. That's it. She doesn't have time to endear herself to us. You know, like we know she's coming in here at the end. I'm not getting too attached to Commander Lockley or Captain Lockley. I'm just not. I kind of don't like her. She's fine. I kind of don't. I kind of do. I don't know. I'm just like, I'm so nonplussed about her, but this gave us some insight into her. It lets us spend a little bit of time with her, getting to know her, getting ingratiated with her. But also don't forget, Jeff, we're now on TNT and there's a lot of viewers who are just catching this show for the first time in season 5. And that was a masterful way of doing a clip show without showing us any clips, catching us up to speed on what's about to happen.
You know, JMS has done a lot of amazing things, but I think that the thing that you have brought to light and needs to be celebrated and acknowledged is that JMS is the master of the clip show that is not the clip show.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
So many people, it's not a clip show. Yes, guys, it is. Understand.
It is, but it's not, but it totally is.
Right. But I literally just said, it's not a clip show.
Yeah, I got pretty excited when she literally just called Bester, you know, and I thought it was funny too. Like, you know, so everybody on Babylon 5 hates Bester, but when she calls CNC to put the message through, they're just like, yeah, cool. Hey, do you want me to leave a message if he doesn't pick up? It's like, this is purely just personal. This is a Sheridan thing. And Garibaldi, understandably.
Well, and Ivanova, and for all those pieces. Hey, remember when Bester declared that their war was his war and we were going to be buds? Yeah, not anymore. Anyway, I did think she gave a little too much personal information to her guy who's relaying her. That should have been, hey, CNC, open up a gold comm channel to Earth for me. Great. Where do you want it to go? Psycor Bester, connecting you now, ma'am. And then she needed to leave a voicemail or something like that. Like, she didn't need to.
I almost think she wanted Byron to know.
Mm.
I mean, that'll never come up or whatever. That's just in my head trying to make all of this more interesting, that she's just like, well, here you go. Look what I got.
Yeah.
Spoiler. I'm full of spoilers for people today. So my notes normally are so clean and organized. I literally just slap stuff into my, I just have this like stream of, I have Brent notes this time.
There you go.
And it's hard because I'm like, oh, let's see. What should we talk about?
Hey, here's a pro tip. As you make a note, highlight it and do like a strike through on it.
Well, I think I should just do what I normally do. It works better for me. I couldn't bring myself to do it.
Welcome to my brain, Jeff. Welcome to my brain.
It's uncomfortable here.
Would you like me to go through with this?
Well, I think on Lockley's voiceover.
Yeah.
What struck me both in the open and the close of it is it was so clinical, right? Like, she's got a little bit of emotion in there. And like, to your point, you're like, eh, I don't like her. I don't not like her. Whatever. And that really came through in the voiceover also. She's like, Joe Friday, you know, just the facts. This is what's going on. Little bit of color in there. But I was struck later when Bester came on board, just at his overall demeanor. Like, The only time he had any emotion tied to anything was when it was an us and them situation. But other than that, clinical as could be. He's just here to assess the situation. I've been here 1,000 times. Let me take care of this thing for you. Next thing I'm going to do is this. I'm going to process them. It's just, he's just doing his job. And I thought it was an interesting comparison on how clinical the two are in what they do.
I loved in the monologue the whole idea about never say yes to something for the favor of a friend or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a pretty dumb reason to say yes to something. And she, and like, it gives her character some color. I still hate and abhor the fact that she and Sheridan used to be married.
Yeah.
In my head canon, that never happened. They just worked together. They knew each other from some point. There was never anything more than that kind of a relationship between those two. Cause it never needed to be more than that. But she has this one line in her monologue that I thought was really cool. And this is not a message for me later, but she's like, all this stuff is going on and I could go talk to them about going and doing this. I wonder if the Centauri need a starship captain. I can speak a little. And she goes, no, I'm going to deal with this because this is my command.
Yep.
I'm here. I'm the one in charge right now. I've got to deal with this. I'm the person here for this time right now. And I loved that. I loved the truth that she would just rather not be doing this right now.
Yeah.
I think we all have that. Like, I've got to do this. It's my responsibility to do it, but dang it, I really just don't want to do it. You know, and having the honesty to be able to say, I don't want to do it, but I'm going to anyway.
It's my job. I take pride in my job. I'll do it.
I think my opinion of her went way up in this episode because of that monologue.
Wow.
I still kind of don't care one way or the other, but I care more now with her. Like, yeah. I feel more connected to her. Has nothing to do with seeing her in her underwear.
That very, very late 90s underwear that she was. Right. Yeah, that was, wow. I mean, that had to hurt her belly button. It was up so high. But it makes me think a lot, because I think that's I have so much in my job that I'm just like, oh my, I believe I have to do this. And the mantra I tell myself when I'm there is, this is why they give me money to show up. Like, if everything I did at work was cool and I loved it, I'd probably do it for free, right? Like, this is awesome, but I got to do this stuff. And so I'll show up. I'll earn my paycheck.
Have you ever seen the show, the play, Hello, Dolly?
I actually never have. I know a lot of the music from
Mathau, all those guys. Okay. Hello, Dolly is actually based on a play called The Matchmaker. It's the exact same story, just not a musical.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a production of The Matchmaker and I played the grumpy old rich dude, the Walter Matthau character. That was me, right? I should show you pictures, Jeff. It is it's phenomenal. Anyway, the makeup guys just did so good. Anyway, there's a line that I've never forgotten from that deal. He's this old rich business owner and he's talking to this girl that he kind of has intents of marrying and she is a business owner herself. And he says this, he says, wages, Mrs. Malloy, you pay those girls of yours too much. Girls like that enjoy their work. Wages, Mrs. Malloy, are paid to make people do work they don't want to do.
Right?
I've never forgotten that line. And it's one of my favorites. And it's true.
Yeah.
By the way, also, if you're a boss and you set wages out there, it's an awful business practice to set wages by that rule.
Yes, by the way. Yeah. It's probably illegal most places.
Pay your people fairly, folks. But still, I'll say this. Did you get the sense that Lockley might have been a telepath?
No.
Like a secret telepath? Mm-mm. When she puts her face up against the thing and they do a thing and she's like, oh, this. And she gets like this thing in and like she knows she's got to go talk to him. And she crawls through the thing and she's there talking like, bring me to Byron now. And he's there and they're talking and they're like, hey, Captain, what's up? And there's no actual reason for her to be in there at all, except for, did we send her the message? Do you think she got it? Maybe, maybe not. 100%. I thought she was like, and I thought she was more latent telepath Ivanova style, because to me, this is clearly what Ivanova would have been doing season 5.
Yeah.
If Claudia had come back.
I didn't get that impression at all, just that they wanted to bring her in. And I'm still not sure why they wanted to bring her in, other than for him just to say, bad things might happen to us, but it doesn't matter because we deserve this and we're going to get it. And you have to give it to us or we will die. You're going to die. Then we will die.
Well, you've always treated us fair, though. There was the just the recognition of that, too. Like, hey.
I did wonder, too, because he's like, you know, that piece, I wanted to acknowledge that. And then they shook hands. And a big deal has been made between Bester and Lita and even Talia back in the day of that whole, like, we wear gloves and we don't touch people. So I'm wondering if, like, he implanted something else in her.
I thought that, too. I was like, oh, did he just do something to, like, kind of first episode Kosh, right? Like, when something happened there. It's like, did he just do something with her when he did that? I had that same thought.
Yeah.
Had that same thought.
That'd probably make this whole thing a lot more interesting. I doubt that's what it's going to be. But so the Alliance stuff, I had this thought. Garibaldi and Sheridan are talking over the metal that's clearly as flimsy could be. Like, is this really from a ship? Like, eh, I don't know. But I'm like, I thought Garibaldi was head of covert intelligence, not Sheridan's chief of staff.
Yep.
He's setting up agendas for things. And it's like, I don't know. I think I'm really landing in this place. Last week, it was like, what's the difference between the Alliance and the League? I don't have it. And now I'm just like, they're just making it up as they go along. And they're being inconsistent with people's roles and what they do. And I am losing steam on this Alliance storyline as well.
I remember that last week. Like, I just don't care. But again, this felt very season two-ish to me. Remember the episode where Ivanova and Sheridan are sitting in front of like all the workers and they're like, strike, you don't care about it. Like, it felt like that. Like, this is just running the station. Let this be the B plot.
Yeah.
Show us this is just every day. I don't have to care about it. It's just this is what you're doing.
But what makes this a thing is that this is going to pull in the dark minions of the shadows and reignite that stuff. And what I thought was cool in the storyline was what the shadows did back at the tail end of season two, early part of season three, is they were pitting all the little races against each other, you know, making alliances and then whispering so that they'd go to war, fighting a shadow war. They're doing the exact same, like the minions are just taking that page out of the playbook. And they're like, hey, we can't go make deals with all these people, but we can plant some evidence and make them go fight each other. So we're kind of getting a rehash of what the shadows did, what, two seasons ago.
Jeff, I would like to read for everybody out there a text message that I sent you earlier today.
Yes.
This text message said, hey, Jeff, I have a new red yarn theory that I'm pretty sure is actually fairly obvious, but I feel like I just figured it out. Get your corkboard out.
Okay.
Here's the red yarn theory. You ready?
Ready.
All right. Last week we mentioned the Raiders, but it wasn't the Raiders.
Not Raiders.
And trade routes. Okay. Lockley says in her opening monologue that the disruptions are continuing. Mm-hmm. And it was in the last episode that we learned that the Drak and the minions are in control of the Regent hiding shipping manifests and all that kind of stuff. Also, the Drak and the minions were allied to the shadows who just stirred stuff up in between the different people out there. Huh. Here's the theory. The Drak and the minions are responsible for the attacks.
What? What?
It was kind of obvious, right?
Very. Yep. I think, we saw a Centauri ship making the attack at the end of that one. And so they're going to pull the Centauri in. They're going to be the ones that get blamed. It's all going to blow up in a big war. And
do you remember when the red yarn theory is like, it literally like was not this obvious. Like it was like, man, this could go anywhere. And people just love us. Like, because you're either so close or you're so far off and you're like, I mean, can you telegraph this anymore? For what it is. But I got to be honest, when it hit me that like, oh, this is the minions, this is the Drak, this is what they're doing, they're totally the ones behind it, I was like, oh, I got it.
My guess, right, here's Jeff's guess on the Drak war, I guess is what it's going to be. Shadows, the shadows so much, but the dark minions and the allies mm-hmm. blame Londo and they blame the Centauri for everything that went down. They were supposed to stay cool. They were supposed
to be like Londo. That's what we heard from the Regent. They like you.
Well, yeah, they like him. They think like him.
Yeah.
They think the same. But I think what they're going to try and do is get a bunch of infighting on the Alliance and then unify. So weaken them up, right? Get them all busted up and then unify them against the Centauri. This whole thing is them wanting to get revenge.
Oh, on the Centauri for Londo turning his back on them and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Interesting. And that would actually... That would rewrite a little bit of what we saw in War Without End.
I don't know about that.
Well, it would redefine it. Let's put it that way. It would redefine what we saw happen in War Without End.
It would give it a lot more context, you know, because, you know, Londo is blaming Sheridan for not wiping all of them out. And so that's going to be a thing here that happens. But, I mean, they went after Centauri Prime. It was in flames 17 years from now.
Yeah. But also turns out Londo really wasn't that mad about it. He just had to put up the front to whatever. Anyway, I have one more note on this particular part.
Okay.
I thought Garibaldi made a really good point, a really interesting point about the idea that we mark our time with wars, not with times of peace. And having been teaching history for a while now, that's generally how you split up your history is we started with this war, which then led to these few things, which led to this war, which said these things. And then we had this war, and then we had this sort of thing that happened after the war. And then this war happened. And, you know, you go from the French for American history. Anyway, it's the French Indian War. And then the fallout of that leads to the American Revolution. And shortly after that, we get the War of 1812. And then all that stuff after that leads into the Civil War. And then we have Reconstruction. And then we have just this little Spanish-American War, you know, happened real fast. And then how that leads up into World War One, and then how that leads to World War Two, and then how that leads to, well, we kind of usually skip over Korea and Vietnam mostly in history, or we're just out of time by that point. You know, but we do. We mark history via war. Okay, world history. If you think about it, like you study the Greeks, you study all these, you always study about the war.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting point.
And why? Because it's exciting.
It's more fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's, you know what it is because wars mark, I disagree with Garibaldi's reasoning why.
Yeah.
Wars mark change. Wars mark when regimes change, when things change, when, and everything in between is when stuff is happening. It's just sort of the, when times are copacetic.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're studying history, you're studying the points of change, the anchor points throughout history. I think that's why we really study it that way. But also wars are more interesting.
Yeah.
But they are the marks of change. And if nothing really changes from a war, guess what we tend to do? Skip over it. That's why we skip over the Spanish American. Nobody really in American history studies the Spanish American War.
No.
Just go, it happened. Why? Because it didn't change much. War of 1812 didn't really change much. You just sort of skip over it real fast.
Mm-hmm.
Even World War One. Think about the difference between how we study, and I don't, rest of the world, I'd love to know what you guys do. Think of the difference of how we study World War One versus World War Two.
It's intense.
Anyway,
another great line that came out of all that stuff was the Drazi. The Drazi are not as cool as I think we thought they were for so very long. They're kind of little jerkwaters.
I mean, seriously, could we not have known that like from way back in the day?
I wonder if that changes like with the green and purple regimes, like maybe. But dude says to Sheridan, every great fall starts with a single mistake, and this was yours. But history remembers, we know this because of the deconstruction of fallen stars. History remembers that his single mistake that led to his fall was letting the telepaths come on board.
And I'd say that it wasn't letting the telepaths come on board. It was him withdrawing his support of the telepaths.
Mm-hmm.
That was his actual mistake.
So let's get to the good stuff here.
Yeah.
Spoo! So gross. So gross.
It looks like yogurt.
Ah.
So where you're supposed to have rotten yogurt? Like moldy? Like what is properly prepared spoo? You remember when dude was eating a spoo sandwich?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of spoo was that? Was that properly aged spoo or was that fresh spoo?
I think it was aged because the fresh spoo was like with a spoon and drippy and wet. Whereas the fermented spoo, because it's basically tofu spoo. Uh-huh. But like it had that firm kind of.
You could make a sandwich out of it.
Yeah.
It could be the actual meat of this. Like even with peanut butter and jelly, like that's still like, it's not runny.
Yeah.
At least it shouldn't be.
But it's pretty cool thinking, you know, by Jakar, he's figuring out what's on the south end of the palace and they go in. Did you have any idea like what they were going to walk into?
No. I knew I was almost positive. They had Narn down there in cells still. I said, do they still have Narn here on the planet left over from the war? That totally makes all the sense. The idea that it was Natoth blew my mind.
Yeah.
Blew my mind.
Yeah, I was thinking this whole thing of like 20 Narns down there. They've been holding on to and torturing and whatever. And now Jakar's going to have this little army or whatever. And then this is so much better. than that. I mean, give Netoth a wrench and she's better than 20 Narns.
Yeah.
Let her go. But I really appreciated Jakar in this, where Londo's making the case that I can't do anything. I'm powerless. And Jakar's like, the hell you are.
Yeah.
Like, this is, dude, come on. Thought that was great.
Mm-hmm.
They had a good plan. I thought it was a really solid plan. It was so funny too. And the one, I don't know, the aide or the whatever comes in and he's like, yeah, you'll do. Yeah. Take off your clothes. Oh, Emperor Cartagia played this game with me too.
But I don't think these are going to fit you. And he's like, let me worry about that, baby. And Jakar at first is all like, Londo. And then she looks at him and he's like, well, it's animal magnetism. I get it. Like, oh my gosh, you two are something else.
They are too much. It's great.
This, though, Jeff, this is why everybody remembers Londo and Jakar as the big buddies, because we saw them in season one. And then really, once the Centauri Narn Wars happened, we very rarely saw them on screen together until now. And now we're seeing them like they are the buddies.
And it's so fun. So fun.
Mm-hmm. The scene you're just talking about, Jeff, where Jakar says to him, what's on the south end of the palace? And Peter's like, I don't know. He's like, yes, you do. He's like, no, it's this and it's that and it's the abandoned this and it's the other. Says, like, I thought Peter Jurassic played that part perfectly. This was not Londo trying to pull the wool over Jakar's eyes.
Mm-mm.
This was not Londo trying to devalue what Jakar felt was valuable. He really didn't know. He had no idea. And I just thought that was a perfect part, the way he played that. So good.
It was great. When they did go get her,
mm-hmm.
I love Jakar and Netoth's relationship. Like, he was so supportive of her, just, you know, advocating her for mm-hmm. her and fighting. You know, this was my aide, Londo. You knew her. You talked to her. Like, he's, for lack of a better term, I was going to say humanizing, but he's narnizing her, you know, for Londo. But then they get in the room and they're like, hey, we're going to get to the ship. Is she going to make it? And he's like, this is Netoth. She could walk halfway across the planet if need be. And mm-hmm. I'm like, he is such a fan of Netoth. I love this. And it made the whole thing work. You know, the fun scene from here really worked. I think because Jakar built her up so much.
Londo gave Jakar a story about why they could have just forgotten and people forgot to countermand an offer. Interesting story. Cute story. Let's just say you should always know the reason why you're doing stuff. Like, Jeff, you served in the military.
I did.
If your job was to go stand in this one spot in the middle of a courtyard for no apparent reason, and why do we do this? Because this is what we've been doing for 200 years. Is there not a level of, like, you got to cast some vision to your soldiers and let them know why they're doing what they're doing and not just being these good little automatons?
Totally.
You need to know why you're doing what you're doing. There is this idea of we just forgot is a piss poor excuse. And, you know, Londo's given up too easy. He's just, oh, well, there's nothing I can do. Yeah, there's something he can do. He just needs to think.
Yeah.
And we've seen Londo give in. This might be actually one of Londo's biggest flaws, is he gives in to not being able to do something too easy. Like when Morden came and he talked to Londo and he's like, what do you want? And then he went off and did stuff. And Londo, like, look back at it. Londo felt like he got swept up into what was happening. It's like he got in front of a boulder that was rolling and he just was trying to stay in front of the boulder. Cause so many times we saw Londo going, oh crap, what am I doing? Oh no, what's happening here? Right. This is an MO for Londo.
Holding on to a wild horse and trying not to get bucked off.
Yeah. Rather than calm the horse the frick down or get bucked off and let the horse go and don't be a part of it.
Yeah. Just dust yourself off. And I think it's he's such a product of the dominant and toxic Centauri culture that he can't not become a part of it when things get moving.
You know, that could be a really interesting character study piece, Jeff, if you were to take who we see Londo in the first season that we've talked about so many times before with I Forgot How to Dance and sitting in bed with Lady Adira going, this doesn't matter. I spend my whole life looking for my name and it doesn't matter, to be that guy, to being the guy who is just on a wild horse, as you put it, trying not to get bucked off.
Well, Garibaldi put it that way, to be fair, but
fair. Well, sure. Okay. I don't remember that, but okay. That'd be an interesting character study, I think, on Londo and where his biggest flaws really lie.
It has a lot to do with like these buzzwords we throw out about authenticity and things like that. And we see it in people where they're one person with this group of people and a different person with this other group of people. And when those people come together, you know, how do they mesh those things? I think that'd be a fascinating thing to look at. But the whole guard standing there on the flower thing, I can't tell you how many thousands and thousands of dollars I have made literally from companies hiring me to come in because they have what I call the six words of death. We have always done it that way and no one questions. Right. And this was a great example. And I liked how he laid it on one of the problems with the monarchy. You know, you can't do stuff, but hey, guess what, Londo? You're actively dismantling a lot of those things right now. I feel like this is a good one to take on. A lot of benefit could come from this.
Sure. I agree with you. Wholeheartedly agree with you. The scene of Londo walking Natah through the court. Again, Peter Jurisic's such a good actor. The way he slipped from drunken Londo into stone sober Londo and then back to the sober Londo. So good. So good. And then the only other note I have on this is the scene where we see Londo and Jakar watching Natah go off and we see them through the window.
Yep.
And we even got a clip of it in this show, in this episode of Londo staring through the window by himself. And now we see Londo and Jakar staring through the window. I think that's a really important moment to see Londo's still in the window, but now he's not alone. He's got Jakar with him and they're there together having done something very honorable and very good. And I just think that was a very poignant moment.
It was a great counter to the long twilight struggle, which was one of the most powerful scenes ever in television of Londo watching those mass drivers. And we saw the reflection, you know, we saw what he saw, mm-hmm. kind of a thing countered with this of exactly that in his worst moment alone and watching horrible things go down that he felt he had no control over to now not alone saving someone.
Jeff, I want to bounce off what you just said. He was alone watching something that he had no control over to here having done something despite having thought he actually had no control over it.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like he's in the same position. Like I just did this and I didn't really have control over it, but I did it anyway versus before of going, I'm standing, I have no control over this happening right now. Again, that goes back to that character study of who yeah. Londo really is and what he gives into and what he doesn't. The idea of what he can do if he actually just tries.
He just does it. Londo's up.
Actually good. What would have happened if Londo would have just stood up and been like, no, we're not doing this?
Yeah. Just like just Jakar said, say something.
Yeah.
Just say something. Or like Sheridan said, just say no one more time or say yes one more time. They say no. Like, just do that.
Yeah.
I think it's a beautiful segue right there because we've reached this point of our conversation where we boil this all down. We see what messages this has, any morals that it imparts, if it holds a mirror to society or maybe even gives us hope that we can be better in the future. Brent, you're going to do that by rating this episode on a scale of 0 to 5 white stars to the strength of that message and just how Babylon 5 it was delivered. So what do you got?
Well, it's in this vein. The reason I didn't say anything when you mentioned it earlier is because this is the vein. I want to take everything I'm about to say. And then at the end, I want to say what we just said about them watching each other in the mirror, like just tack that on there. Londo very quickly goes from there's nothing I can do. And Jakar saying, yes, there is, to formulating a plan and executing a plan. And he got the girl involved, the guard. He had a fully fleshed out plan for that. You're going to walk away from here. You're not going to know what's going to happen. And then you're never going to come back in this room again ever. And you're going to seal this wall off and no one's ever going to come down here and see what I've done to this girl. And he's like, yes, sir. I sure am. You got it, son. You know, and Londo takes everything. Jakar did nothing. All Jakar did was say, yes, you can. In fact, Jakar tried to stop Londo in a few places. Remember, he's like, why are you telling her to take her clothes off, Londo? What are you? He throws the what's the liquor? Bravari?
Yeah.
He throws the Bravari on him, and then Jakar's all like, oh, you know, here's the truth. There's always something you can do. You just have to be willing to go there and think it through and then execute it. In the end, Londo says that doing the right thing, standing on that ship with Jakar, doing the right thing was exhilarating. I dare say it felt exhilarating, not just because of what he did, not the fun of going through all of that, but also because of the righteousness of the action itself. Was this an intended message, though, Jeff? Is this what JMS was trying to put down on paper? Was it a mirror to society? Was it a commentary on anything? I don't think so. I think either A, it's a personal philosophy of JMS, or B, and I think this is probably the most likely, and I don't know, we'd have to ask him to find out. This is just what the characters would have done in that situation. Londo and Jakar are so fully fleshed out by now in JMS's mind. All he's doing is going, okay, Londo, what do you say here? All right, Jakar, what are you saying now? That's how that writing is going. Those characters are speaking on their own as far as JMS is concerned at this point. And this is the way they would have done it. That being said, I thought it was a fantastic message through and through. The poignancy of seeing Londo and Jakar standing in that mirror, or standing in that window, tack on everything we just said about how that goes back. This one is better than halfway. This is on a scale of 0 to 5. I'd originally thought about giving it 2.5, kind of meeting it right in the middle, but this is actually more than half. So I'm going to give this one 3 white stars.
I like that. I like it, especially because of the Babylon 5 way it was delivered. It was delivered in a way that played on maybe Londo's lowest moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then the visual representation of his lowest and one of his lowest and one of his highest personal moments.
If just to satisfy our many listeners out there, I would just like to say the redemption of Londo Mollari continued in this episode.
There you go.
I don't know that it's complete yet, but it has advanced because of this episode.
Yeah, good rating.
Well, Jeff, I may be doing the white stars, but my friend, you get to be the sole person who places this episode in our absolutely 100% completely accurate and definitive ranking of season 5 of Babylon 5. Our current top 5, Jeff, I don't get a say in this because I have a feeling where I would rank it, and I don't know where you're going to. Our current top 5 is The Very Long Night of Londo Mollari. Number 2 is No Compromises. Number 3 is Learning Curve. Number 4 is A View from the Gallery. Number 5 is Day of the Dead. Jeff, I ask you, does this episode crack the top 5? And if so, where?
If it wasn't for Byron, this episode would crack the top 5.
Yeah.
But it hurts it. That Byron stuff hurts it a lot. It brings it so
far down. You're not joking.
But that said, it's right there. And so I love this had Bester in it. I have to look at In the Kingdom of the Blind and this one. The Centauri storyline is so compelling, and it's been great. Last week's was so serious and heavy, and it was setting the table, reintroducing characters and a setting, all that kind of stuff. This one put Londo, he's there. Jakar's there. They're going to go do stuff, and they had fun. We leaned into the characters a lot more, and I mean, those scenes were just perfect. So I'm going to make this one our new number 6.
Oh, just outside, right below Day of the Dead too. I liked it. Day of the Dead was so fun.
Well, Brent, that's it for A Tragedy of Telepaths. Next week, we're going to be watching Phoenix Rising for the first time. We don't watch ahead. We don't look at thumbnails. Well, we avoid the thumbnails at all costs. We don't read descriptions or anything like that. We play this game where on the title alone, we predict what the next episode is going to be about. I am endlessly curious. I have no idea whatsoever where to even begin guessing. Brent, what do you think is going to happen next week in Phoenix Rising?
Well, let me think. It's the war with the telepaths, and by God, please let Byron die. Please. I do not wish for the death of characters very often. But I want this character, not the actor. The actor's a fine human being, but this character needs to go. And so help me if he winds up splayed out like Neo at the end of Matrix 3, you know, as a full-on messiah crucified type situation, I'm going to lose it. But I need this storyline to be done, and we need to move on. and get back to like the actual stuff that's really compelling about season five. So that's where we are. We're set up for it. Everything about this episode set us up for that. The one curiosity I have, and I'm not going to make a prediction as far. Oh, maybe I should, because that'd be more in the spirit of what this episode really is. What is the Phoenix Rising? Because I love that title. So let's hear Phoenix rising from the ashes. Is it Lita? She's also a redhead, right? Like, so she's kind of gone down, and now this is her seeing how bad the telepath cult is and coming back. I don't think so, because this is going to go up against Bester, and Bester's not great either. So I don't think that's it. Maybe it actually has nothing to do with the telepaths, and this is in reference to Londo and Jakar and something like that. I have no idea. What do you think the Phoenix Rising is, Jeff? Because I think it's still about the telepaths.
I do too. Yeah, I think Byron's going to die. I think that's this one. It's going to get bloody. We're going to see more of that just out, shoot him up stuff with telepath things going on. It's going to be bloody. Byron's going to die, and the Phoenix is going to be his legacy. He's going to be Obi-Wan Kenobi, where once you strike me down, I will become more powerful than you could possibly imagine. They showed that guy tagging the wall, Free Byron. Byron is going to become a rallying cry. He's going to be a martyr, and he's going to galvanize telepaths, not just on Babylon 5, but I think this telepath war is going to get a lot bigger, and it's not ending next week. Mm. I think we've got at least two more episodes of this. This one that'll bring it up to a crest, and then the episode following or a little after will be the big send off. But I think I even wrote here, his unearned legacy is going to be the Phoenix.
Yeah.
We'll find out in just 1 week's time right here. You can catch us anywhere you get your podcasts, here on YouTube. Thank you for being here with us. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you're listening, or if you're watching us on YouTube, subscribe, hit that bell, get notices when we send other stuff out, because we got some other cool things going on here as well. Leave us a rating, a review, comment down below, and share this with someone. YouTube's got it. Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, Amazon, Spotify, Audible. They've all got it. Share this with somebody who either loves Babylon 5 already or is just now falling in love with the series. So until next time.
Hey, Jeff.
Yeah, what's up?
How you been doing lately, man?
Thanks for asking. But I mean, I'm fine. I'm a little depressed about inflation and that kind of stuff. And really, like, can we get real? I mean, hemlines are starting to go down again.
Shut up. Let's just get the hell out of here, okay?
Initiating getting the hell out of here maneuver.
We're not some deep space franchise. This station is about something.
When you do that thing,
yeah,
it's so distracting because I just start thinking about food. We're like 3 weeks out now from, so in the States, right, we have Memorial Day, and God, I love Memorial Day because it's barbecue season.
Cooking out, man. Yeah.
We've been having a debate here in the Aiken household, because we've been traditionally a Traeger household, right? Pellets, wood pellets, plug in. It's great. Oh, yeah, okay. But charcoal, baby. Like, so we're thinking about
Do you put like mesquite wood chips in your charcoal or anything like that, or you just go straight charcoal?
Yes. Like both, you know, it depends on what you're doing.